Gay Reed from the Doo-Wop Shop. Hey, I want you to remember that you're listening to Mike Miller, my good friend, here on the Harmony Street Show.
Hey, this is Eugene Pitt of the Jive 5, and you're listening to my good, good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show. I heard your name was Mike. Mike at the mic. And things that I like. Your show is a thriller. So here we go with Mike Miller.
Hi, this is Tony McCauley, lead singer of The Reflections. You're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Mary Wilson of The Supremes, and you're listening to my friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show. And we just have so much fun, my baby love, me and Mike Miller. Woo!
It's my pleasure to have on the Harmony Street Show Mr. Tommy Ronca, the very shy Tommy Ronca, original founding member of the Chaperones. Hi, Tommy. How you doing?
How you doing, Mike? It feels good to be on your show. I'm happy to be here and calling to you. It's great. How you doing? How's the weather in Florida?
It's fine. It rained all last week, but I think it's clearing up now. You know, we're coming into hurricane season, so we have to get the hurricane shutters, you know, like make sure that they're sliding back and forth. Because, you know, like out in California, you know, it's eroding. And the coastline is changing, but here trees go sideways. So, you know, we all have our stuff.
I lived in Naples for a while, and I loved it down there for a while. But we had to come back over to the West Coast. Right
yeah.
Now I'm in Maricopa, yeah. Arizona. The weather here is 111 degrees. I'm a shuttle flight from Vegas. I love it because that's where I do most of my work and stuff
yeah.
With the guys. But I love it down here in Arizona. It's really nice. Maricopa is a beautiful town, and it's just very hot. Right, this is a hot time for us. You know, but what's so great is I always think about people back east because that's where I grew up. You know,
right.
You know, I'm from Farmingdale, Long Island.
Absolutely, you're a Long Island guy, the same way I am.
You bet, and I really miss going to Jones Beach. You know, I can remember going to Jones Beach where it was $1.50 to get across the
freeway. Oh yeah.
Yeah,
and we used to go when we had the a cappella group, and we used to actually go like to Section 4, and we wouldn't make it past the tunnel because it had a good echo, and we'd do like an hour and a half in the tunnel before we got to the beach.
Yeah, well, you know, those days were wonderful days for me. The Long Beach was great. I remember Long Island so well, and I miss it. Been in my heart forever. I'll always be a New York, Long Island guy, even though I lived in Vegas for 40 years and played Reno, Tahoe, and Vegas all the time. But
right.
Honestly, I do miss the East Coast. I always have.
Yeah, well, you know, we talk all the time about all of those wonderful clubs on Long Island when we were younger and how much talent really came out of Long Island, yourself being one of those talents.
Thank you. You know, I'll tell you, I remember when I met Neil Diamond, and that was really, I was playing a little place called, it was like the Four Clover Club or something. It was
right.
A little boy and girl club
right.
Back in the old days. And here comes Neil Diamond. I didn't know Neil Diamond. This was before he was a star and everything.
Right.
And it was a wonderful time I met him. And I, you know, it's really strange because I look back now and I say to myself, my God, I knew Neil. We were kids. It was wonderful. I mean, God, and Billy Joel, all of these guys, Eddie
right.
Murphy, you know.
Was a Long Island guy.
Long Island guy.
Great chops, by the way. You know, Eddie can sing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. He's on Facebook, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
We're all on Facebook.
Like, that's true.
People, it's a lot of fun. But it's such a time that, you know, when I was in Vegas and I was playing Reno and Tahoe in Vegas, I did miss back there. I did, and I missed all the groups. For the Chaperones, we had fun. It was a fun time of life. You know, I remember, if I can bring this to you, listening to my record when it first came out.
Sure.
The Moon record. And I was in my father's car. It was Minoru, because there was no stereo in those days. It wasn't even any.
I had my 65 GTO, brand new burgundy with a black vinyl top, and it had the AM radio, but it had the little reverb unit in the back, so when you hit a bump, it went shh. Remember that? Do you remember that?
Remember that? Yes, I do.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm driving through the town of Farmingdale, and I hear the record on the radio, and it was.
Oh man!
I couldn't believe it. I was just.
What a thrill!
I couldn't wait to get home and tell my mother and father. Guess what? Our record is on the radio. You know, it was a wonderful time. It really was. And I miss all the guys back there. And that's when I met Larry Chance. And, well, and we were all young. We were all playing Clay Cole shows.
Yeah.
Murray Takei shows. And,
he was still Larry Figueredo in those days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was just working with the Louis Lyman and Frankie and with the teenagers.
Yeah.
And Brian Hyland. Well, a lot of groups were on our label. Well, we were on the Jubilee label, yeah. Mo Josie. You know,
well, who were the original guys from the Chaperones?
Well, the original two guys started out was Roy Marchesano and myself. What
right.
happened was in 1957. Oh mm-hmm. my God, I've got
wow.
My age is coming up on me here. In 1957, Roy and I wanted to be singers. And we started to put the group together, and we were trying to put a group together like everybody else was in Long Island at the time, all the kids going to school. And then along came Nick. Nick was older. Nick was older. He was going just about getting started at college, CW Post.
Right.
And then...
which is where I went.
Yeah, I know
yeah.
that. You had mentioned that to me, yeah.
yeah.
And so Nick went to college there. And then we got another kid at the time named Dave Kelly, a nice Irish kid who sang
right.
bass for us. And then we didn't have Tony Amato until later. And what had happened was Nick went to school with Steve Blaine, whose father was Jerry Blaine, who owned Jubilee Records. And
okay.
He asked Steve for a favor, and we didn't have anything really going yet. But Nick kept telling me, "Hey, look, guys, I'm with Steve Blaine. He's my friend, and this, that, and this." So we started. Then we found a song which Roy started writing called "Cruise to the Moon." And it was fun, and we started to elaborate on it, but we didn't really have a lead singer. You know, we were four guys putting harmonies together and
right.
learning. That was what it was all about, like every other group in New York, in the tri-state area, let's put it that way.
Right.
And then all of a sudden we played a place in Lindenhurst, Long Island, called the Club 40.
Right.
Here comes Tony Amato, big, buxom-type guy, good singer, good, great, play guitar. He was just a really sweetheart, this guy. And
right.
A really nice person. And he ended up becoming our lead. And because we asked him, we already have a contract, but we don't have a lead singer. And he joined us. We merged. And then the five of us became the Chaperones. But we weren't the Chaperones yet. We were called the Fairlanes.
Right.
And when we hooked up with Josie and we gave him Cruise to the Moon.
It's nothing like a good nothing like a good car name. You know.
And so there we were, the Fairlanes. We first started out as the Sharptones, and then we became the Fairlanes. Then Jubilee Records said, "No, we don't like this name."
Uh-huh.
Mickey Eichner and Steve Blaine were the producers on Josie album. And on that label was Bobby Freeman, Brian Hyland, the Cadillacs.
Right.
And they were all on the same on that label.
Do You Want to Dance was on that label, I remember.
That's right. And so... what happened was, so now we go over to Steve Blaine's house and Jerry Blaine, and they're having a barbecue, and we sing for them, and they said, "We're going to record you guys." So the next thing I know, they put all the music together on the two songs, and we went into RCA Studios in Manhattan. We were a nervous wreck. I mean, I was so scared.
I know that feeling.
It was a big band, and you know, and there we were. But into the studio, we were scared. I was 17 years old.
And they kick it off, and they just point to you, and that's it. And, you know, in those days, I remember, you know, everything ran at once. It wasn't like, you know, if the drummer dropped the stick, you had to start over again. It wasn't like, you know.
And then what happened, Tony got nervous. He was in the little booth with the headphones
right.
on. And you're right. It was, I think, 32 tracks was the most, or
right.
16 to 32 at RCA. And so we did that, and then all of a sudden we had to do a few more takes, but it came out pretty. I was really surprised.
Right.
And it came out really good. And we liked the other side. I think the other side, "Dance with Me," was the tune. I'm trying to remember back. But
right.
Bottom line is, then what happened was, so now we had the five of us, and we're all excited, and we take the train back into Long Island, the Long Island Railroad, and here we are. And then nothing happened, and we waited, and we waited.
I know that feeling.
What we had to really understand, which we were too young to understand,
yeah.
that there were others before us.
Yeah.
The releases, that you know that had releases coming out. We're waiting, well, maybe they just shelved us, and they're not going to do it for us, and it was, you know, one of those things.
I talked about this with Lloyd Price, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and we said, you know, we came to the conclusion that signing a record contract was the beginning of something. It was not the pinnacle or the end all of anything. It was the beginning of something.
Yeah. So then all of a sudden, like I said, I'm driving through Farmingdale and my dad's car, and I hear the record.
Boom. Shouldn't be on a cruise to the moon. Cruise to the moon. See how happy we will be all alone, just you. Never die, my darling, come with me and stay by my side. A cruise to the moon, buy a ticket and seal it with a kiss.
I just couldn't believe it. They were
right.
Playing it every 15 minutes at all the different stations.
Wow.
And it was really a wonderful thing. Now, you know, every group, I mean, when I was still in high school, so when I went to school, all the kids up to me, and I mean, everybody signing autographs for teachers, and it was really something. It was a, I mean, I wish that every group, this is how I really feel.
Uh-huh.
Of course, I've always felt this way because I've been an entertainer all my life.
Right.
But I've always felt, I really wish that some of the great groups, the harmony groups from the Bronx, from Brooklyn, from
right.
or up in Boston, from Philly that never made it, that had a real hard time.
Oh, yeah.
Would have felt this feeling.
One was as good as the next, too, and it was just the planets lining up the right way that made one fly and the other one stay, you know, on the street corner.
And so, you know, I feel with my heart, and I'll be honest with you, I really feel that what we've gone through, what we did, I wish that every one of those great groups try and sing it under the light post, looking for the echo down in the Manhattan.
Right.
In the train areas, and I wish every one of those groups could have felt the feeling that I had. And so whatever I've gone through in my career, in my life, I dedicate to all of those kids. Because
well, that's a really sincere thought, you know, Tommy. As you say it in your humble way, you know, I mean, you're due up royalty, so, you know, coming from you, that's a very heartfelt thought.
Well, that's really nice, but you know what I mean. I've been very, very lucky in my career.
Right.
And I've maintained a good standard of living and a good standard of life. And I just, you know, every time I sing Cruise to the Moon and every time we perform in front of people and we're at the Westbury Music Fair, you know, at the new building. I mean, every time we're there, every time I do something, I always have that feeling. And, I care. I care about all these people because
right.
they were all part of my life. I can't explain it. But Johnny Maestro, I mean, there's only one Johnny Maestro in the world.
Lloyd Price.
I've always been a Lloyd Price guy. What's quite a few of the groups. The Mystics.
Right.
Vito Pacon's group, the
right.
Elegants, the Dubs, Javi,
right.
all of these different groups that I feel and love every one of them. And Larry Chance is the greatest. He's still around. He's still working hard.
All those years, Larry just never missed a beat. He worked every day of his life in the Catskills here, there. He worked on his own. He worked with groups. He worked. I mean, he's not missed too many days,
No, I don't know. And you know what? I look at a group like Kenny Vance still up there
right.
performing and doing great. And I look at the Duprees. And I love the guys. I mean, they keep the music going. And I look at Anthony. I've worked with Anthony Gordine so many times.
Right.
Anthony in Vegas when I played Vegas a lot. I mean, he was Anthony was always in Vegas. And this was while, but don't forget, he had quite a few other hits besides from the doo-wop generation.
Absolutely.
He had Teddy Randazzo wrote Going Out of My Head for him. And
Hurt So Bad and the long list of all those.
On the Outside Looking In. And,
yeah.
Those songs for Anthony they're legendary.
Well, Outside Looking In has become a standard, I mean, practically. So, but it was Teddy Randazzo's strings and horns and arrangements that took Anthony to the next level.
Yeah, it did. And you know what? He magnified on it because Anthony played Vegas a lot, where a lot of the groups on Long Island and on the West Coast, stayed on the East Coast.
Right.
That's where they were really known. The West Coast is a lot different out here. We get the Creedence Clearwater and the Beach Boys.
Right.
There's certain groups, Gary Puckett, real big on the West Coast.
Oh, yeah. And Dick Clark had a lot of groups under his wing, the Steppenwolf-type groups and Paul Revere groups. I was talking to Dennis Lambert not long ago, and he wrote a lot of stuff for the Grassroots, and he was located out in California, so he actually spent a lot of time with some of the California groups, and he explained to me the same thing. It was a little bit different out there.
It was. The West Coast, when I came out here, as you know, I think you and I discussed this, I took the Peppermint Lounge show, or company of that show.
Right.
Manhattan, 45th Street, and there was like Twisters, the Twister Show. I don't know how many people on the radio have remembered that are from that, from New York, but the Peppermint Lounge was on 45th, and it had a great show in there when the twist was big, but not Chubby Checker's twist. This was Joey D's twist.
Right, exactly.
And we took that, a company of that show, and brought it to the Flamingo in Las Vegas, and they loved us. We were there for a three-week engagement, ended being there for 3 years, and of course, the rest is all history. We just never went back.
Well, Joey's a good friend of mine for all those years too, and his having come from that Jersey nucleus, with the Brigattis, especially David Brigatti, who is such a little genius. It was all good. It's, something I didn't realize. They did a tune years ago called Face of an Angel, which is one of my favorite. It was written by David Brigatti. And I said to Joey, who were those girls on that CD, man? And he said, those were the Shirelles. They went to our high school. So
that's the way it was in those days. People were backing people up. That's what that's what happened to Elvis when he had the Jordanaires behind him.
Right.
Same basics. They put what was the girl's name? That was Patty. Behind Elvis, they had the Sweet Inspiration.
Right.
The four black girls. They were excellent.
Right. Oh yeah.
And then they had the JT Sumpter Sumpter group.
Yeah. Right.
And then they had the Jordanaires because I knew I met Elvis. I met Elvis at the Flamingo at the Sahara. He came to see our show, and we were in a show at the Sahara called Pinups.
Wow.
1976, the year before he died, and he came to see the show. He was at the Hilton, the International Hotel in Vegas, and with Kenny Rogers was in the lounge.
Wow.
At that time. So it was. But the girls behind Elvis, he had always had a big band. Elvis, can I talk a little bit about Elvis?
Absolutely.
I know a lot because I have to say this because Elvis Presley was the entertainer in Las Vegas. Elvis brought a sweetness to Vegas. Besides, he was exciting. He had a fabulous show, but he was a giver.
Right.
Remember him giving? I can remember him giving a valet Parker his Cadillac.
Yeah, I heard that story. Yeah,
and that went all over the news. I remember when he used to come. He used to come visit all the lounge acts. It's like Kenny Rogers. They would come. And we were, now the lounges in Vegas at that time were 250 seat lounge.
Right.
And they used to come and see us. In fact, I worked with, Sarah Vaughan and all the groups, the Four Aces, they were all in the Mills Brothers, they were all in the lounges. And I remember Elvis, he used to go see all of them. Of course, he went to see Louis. Everybody went to see Louis Prima.
Right, and Keeley.
Right, and Vegas was a different type of a situation. The doo-wop, as I say, the love of my life, was over. And so people had to move on after 1965 into another type of music. Dion and the Belmonts were not the number one group in the world as they were in the early 60s and late 50s and early 60s.
Correct.
It was over, and the music changed. And I always felt in my heart that we have to change with the music. And we went to the Michael Jacksons, and we went to the breakdancing, and we went to disco, which I thought was a fabulous kind of music.
Me too, and I'll tell you why. Because a lot of the R&B of the 70s was just an extension of the harmonies from the R&B from the 50s. And the only thing that bothered me over the years was that a lot of those guys did not pay homage to the guys that went before them. But I know if you've ever heard the Intruders do, strict doo-wop, I mean, it'll blow you away. So, I mean, really and truly, the groups from the 50s and the early 60s were the ones that paved the way for the disco. And to me, it was just, it was doo-wop with a big band sound,
yep.
As far as I was concerned.
Definitely agree with that. The pulse was there. That music came in. The Michael Jackson thing came in. All of the black acts, which I loved, which was more like the OJs, the Manhattans.
Absolutely.
The Shy Lights. These type of groups were my kind of groups.
There was no group better than the Jackson 5 when they were younger, and Michael was with the group, and they had all that support. They were fabulous.
Well, you know what happened? When they seen a kid like Michael he was an innovative type young man, and they liked him because he had charisma and he had a lot going on, and they marketed him. That's what they did. They took him out of the group, actually, and they, in my opinion, they marketed him just like Colonel Tom Parker marketed Elvis.
Right.
Same thing. They did the glove and the penny pitch shoes, and Michael became. I thought the best album he ever made was the Thriller album,
yes.
In my opinion.
Oh, that was very avant-garde for the time, even though there was some avant-garde arranging and things that were a little bit ahead of its time, that was way ahead of its time. I mean, every cut on that album was primo.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I just thought that he was at his peak at that point. He's done a lot of great things, and they marketed him absolutely fantastically, fabulous, in my opinion.
You know.
Because, now today, things are different. I mean, I look back, and I look into hip-hop, and I look into rap dancing, rap music, which is cool. If this is what became...
Some of it is real good.
Some of it is real good,
and I'm
100% for it. I look at the videos today.
Right.
We're all older now. We give the time to take and look at the videos. The videos are fantastic.
Oh, they're so, I mean, they're so, so well produced. And, the technology, just has soared since we were younger.
Yeah, technology, computers, absolutely fantastic. So, I've got to give it. Look, music goes on and on. Sure, we could go back to the doo-wop times, and right now all the baby boomers are all retiring, and they want to go back to those wonderful years that they remember. And I'm one of them.
Right.
And those were wonderful years. You know why they were wonderful years? Because they were simple. They were actually simple years. The music wasn't that hard. Everybody was doing it. All the guys were singing on the corners, and everybody was trying to have a group. Everybody was bringing their demo records around.
It's true, but you and I know, because we've been there, that not everybody who is a good singer can sing with a doo-wop feel, and not every five singers can get together and blend and have a group. I've seen five really good singers get in a room and not be able to blend with each other. So really, it's harder than most people think to catch that magic in a bottle, you know, where guys really click and really get a sound.
I agree with you, because I've been in so many different groups, singing wise. Yes, you're 100% right. And what we talked about the other night when we spoke the first time, you're only as good as the worst person in the group.
Oh, yeah, I hear you.
To me, they were all good. And in my honest opinion, some were better than others. Some got luckier than others.
Love them.
I think the first hit they had was just a wonderful rhythm.
Although Jimmy played me some stuff and sent me some stuff years ago that was, you know, early, and he said to me, "We were terrible at the beginning, man. We stayed in the living room and we rehearsed and we just made it tight and we beat each other up until it was tight." And, you know, at the beginning, he says it really wasn't that tight.
Well, you know, his voice was unique as far as I think they did a great.
It really was.
Yeah, whoever did the engineering on that Skyliner first record, the big one,
right,
was excellent. Was an excellent A&R man, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Joe Rock was really the secret to that. I mean, his alliance with Joe Rock, you know, was the magic formula, you know, to the Skyliners and, you know, the strings and the horns and just the way it was handled. And I talked to him one day. I had a conversation with him one time about how they handled the bass. Now, most doo-wop groups handle the bass in two different ways. Sometimes some groups have the bass as a separate entity sticking way out there, you know, as almost, you know, right under the lead with the triad in the background, kind of in the background. Jimmy said to me, "We always put the bass in the mix instead of having it sticking way out on the bottom. The bass was there so that if you took it away, you would miss it, but it was in the mix. It didn't hang out." And I said, "That's interesting."
It is interesting when you think about how people approach the things in different ways. You know, Mike, it's the strangest thing that I see. Some songs are written that, when written, are automatic hits. A great example is "Wind Beneath My Wings."
Right.
Right, the one, Bette Midler got the tune, right? She ended up, I mean, I don't, Anybody could have done that. Done that song. If the song was a hit, the song that Celine Dion did, the big hit, the first one she had,
right.
I think it was Titanic song, wasn't it?
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was a well-written tune. These are songs. There are songs out there, you know it and I know it, that are well-written.
You can't hurt them.
You can't hurt them, no matter who gets the first shot. Whitney Houston. She, I mean, I don't think anybody ever sang the Star Spangled Banner better than Whitney Houston.
I was years ago at Media Sound, all right, and in Manhattan, and I was on a project called Bionic Boogie. And it was a whole bunch of vocalists, whatever. Sissy Houston was on the project and a whole bunch of other vocalists. Whitney was sitting in the control room. She was about 13 and a half years old, and she was sitting with her arms folded, and Sissy was saying, that's my daughter Whitney. She wants to be a model. And nobody ever talked about singing, you know. And Thelma was there, Thelma Houston, you know. And you know, and she was like really, you know, whining and complaining, when are we getting out of here? I'm getting bored. This is ridiculous. All of a sudden, 5 or 8 years later, we started to hear from Whitney, and I said, oh, my God, she outsang her aunts and her mother and everybody else.
Well, the reason I use her, she's been through, you know, she hooked up with Bobby Brown. And,
right.
You know, and it was a tough situation for both of them, as far as I see it. You know, I knew Bobby Brown from Vegas.
Well, you know, they always blame Bobby for having been a bad influence on her, if I could speak, you know, out there.
Yeah. Well, you know, what happens is a lot of these singers, these really good singers, they meet these rock players. And throughout the industry, and then, you know, they fall in love or whatever they do. And I think that but getting back to A, I think Whitney is one of the best singers that I have ever heard. I know they all mostly
you
came
bet.
From gospel music, because I know Donna Summers came from gospel.
Oh, yeah.
Music. And I know that, but I got to be, like I said, I think Whitney Houston is, and I mean, I don't know her. I never did meet her, because we just didn't make acquaintances, but it.
Right.
But I think she's, and I know she's had a really hard life. She's really had a tough time.
You bet.
Along the way, but she's another one. But there again, if Wind Beneath My Wings is a great song, and Bette Midler got it, and she did a fantastic job on it. You know, there's certain singers that just get lucky, and they have good writers, and they get those big ones, I wish, honestly, down in the year, back in the years of the doo-wop times, I wish we had writers. We did all of our writing ourselves.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, and then there were other groups that walked into the real building, whatever, and they happened to stumble upon somebody's portfolio or whatever, and they had all these tunes hanging out. Because I know, even when I had my group, the Islanders, you know, we were on Relic, and then we were on MGM, and we fizzled. You know, we had a couple of hits that were hits, a couple of tunes that were played a couple of times, but never took off. Jay Traynor wrote us a tune years ago, and we used, actually, with MGM, they were using Big Bucks. They had they were using Maynard Ferguson's band, you know, to back us up in the studio, and, you know, some big bucks spent. But then, you know, it kind of fizzled, got played a little bit, fizzled, and the guys kind of gave up afterwards. They said, we don't want to go through this again.
Yeah.
They were too young and immature to realize that, you know, you might stumble on your first one, your second one, but if you hang in there and you're good, the next one, all of a sudden,
you know,
might fly.
I'm 100% in agreement with you, because I'll tell you, the Chaperones, we were young, we were naive, good word, we were not seasoned in any way, and what happened was we didn't have a manager, we didn't have a press agent, we didn't have, all we had was Jubilee leading us, you know, helping us out.
Well, you've been known to say that, you know, you guys were the kings of supermarket openings.
Yeah, we did. And how that worked was pretty simple. Every time there was a supermarket to open, Jubilee would call us up, pick us up in a limo, bring us over there, wherever the supermarket was on Long Island, and we would sing, and that's how we got. They gave us that. But
why
Jubilee,
not?
Getting back to that, Jubilee was the Jubilee Records. Josie Records was they were the guys that gave us the name the Chaperones.
Right.
And because we were five guys trying to do like the elegance.
Right.
We were trying to be, the mystics, and we were trying to get a record out, and so they said, you're going to be called the Chaperones, and that's what happened. So people say, well, how'd you get your name? Well, we got our name, honestly, from Jubilee, Steve Blaine and Mickey Eichner. They're the ones that really gave us. Steve Blaine has passed away now. But,
right. And you really, guys did shows for Murray, which was great, and you worked at Freedomland, and you did all the hot spots. I'm sure you worked with Clay Cole too.
Well, we knew Clay. We did that show probably about 6 or 7 times.
Right, right.
With Clay, yeah. We even tried to push our Man from the Moon, which is the last record we all did together, which was a great song, but it was past its time already. We were getting into the Rolling Stones, were the number one group in the country. So
yeah.
Here we're trying to hang into the doo-wop era, and it was slowly fizzling out.
Well, let's go through a little bit the discography of the Chaperones. I know, Cruise to the Moon, that was actually recorded in 59, wasn't released till 1960, if I'm right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the follow-up
was Shining Star.
Was Shining Star, which is, which I play all the time on my show as well.
We had a really hard time doing that. By the way, we did not write that one.
Uh-huh.
Jubilee gave it to us because they wanted us that in that particular song. They wanted us to sound like the Elegants.
Yeah. Well, right. It's funny. Dion lives not far from me, and when I bump into him, we talk, and he told me once. He said, I actually modeled myself after Vito. After Vito Pacone, he said, that little cry in my voice I developed from listening to Vito Pacone. He said, because he was just about a year and a half before me. And, he said, because really my first venture into the music was country. I was listening to rockabilly and country. He said, when I got into the doo-wop thing, all of a sudden I listened to Vito and he really inspired me, which is interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting because we liked Little Star was like, oh wow, listen to that. And Little Darling was by the Diamonds. That was another big one that we loved.
Those were perfect records, and
of course, excellent records.
I was lucky enough to have sung with the Mystics for my time, and that was a great honor, to be with those guys. The real story is that Doc Pomus and Mort Schumann wrote Teenager in Love for the Mystics. You know this story, and Dion said, I don't think so, because he was the head honcho at that time at Laurie, and they had to give it to Dion. It became a number one hit. Doc Pomus and Mort Schumann went home and wrote Hushabye over a weekend and gave it to the Mystics, and that became a number one tune. So, hot stuff.
That's where the Chaperones missed it, because if we would have got it more involved with those kind of people, writers.
Right.
I think we would have come up with better, The Anthony got lucky, because what happened to Little Anthony was very simple. When he met, what's his name, Teddy Randazzo.
Right.
Teddy already had the songs for him. And Teddy, do you remember what Teddy Randazzo's group was called? Do you remember the group name of that?
Are you talking about, was he with the Chuckles, the Three Friends?
He was with the Chuckles, and he was with the Three Friends.
Right, that's what I thought.
Yeah, and what happened was Teddy was a writer, and he wrote those nice songs for Anthony, and Anthony got lucky. We just didn't hang out. We were too immature in the industry at that time to know that we needed a writer, and we needed a. Where do we find the writer? Where do we find the press agent? Where do we find the manager? Where do we find agents? We did not know. We were very foolish. The record was doing great, and here we had nobody to really help us. And I remember, I look back now, and I say to myself, well, we were young. We were silly. And
right.
We were just happy to get a record on the radio, if you know what I mean.
No, how many groups wish that they could have done that? It's funny too. One of the guys down in that sings in Fort Lauderdale with a group that never had a hit. He was a member of the Valrays who recorded Yo Me Pregunto. I remember the night that record won on Murray the K's record review board. The record did not become a big hit. They then took the group and became Saltwater Taffy and had a bubblegum or two hit. But, you know, that was it. I mean, but that was enjoyable enough. I mean, for me, I've heard some of my stuff back. A couple of my tunes have been used in movies and some other things, and they've been on big compilations. And, man, you know, it's nice just to have your little grain of sand on the beach.
Yeah, it is. It just even if it's just a small area, we were just overwhelmed that we were able to be in the same, what do I want to say?
The same, on the same stage, in the same dressing room.
Right, on the other guys.
Breaking bread. I mean, to me, too. I mean, you know, I've been lucky enough to have shared a stage with some of my musical heroes. And to me, nobody can ever take that away from me.
No, it's something that you'll have forever, and I, you know, you're really. I'm not saying this for no other reason, but
right.
I can't believe all the things that you remember. I cannot believe that you remember all of these wonderful groups and all these wonderful times. I mean, it absolutely blows my mind. It really does.
Yeah,
Long Island.
Thank you.
All the way through the Catskills, all the way through some Vegas things, some South Florida.
Yeah.
Big shows, the Nader shows.
Yeah, I know all the names, and I know you know all the names. Well, you know, here's the thing. A lot of people talk, oh, yeah, I did this and I did that. But they can't back it up because, you know, because they can't give you the names, the times, the dates, you know, and whatever.
But what happens is they can't give you the stories.
I can't find my car keys, though.
I want you to know that I'm a very big advocate of truth in music. You know that.
Yes.
I believe in truth in music. I think Bowser, I'd like to take a moment to speak about that.
Right.
Bowser, to me, has done a wonderful job with bringing out some of these groups that are fakers or pretenders. Let's call them that.
And he does it out of the love of the music because, you know, what's ironic about Bowser is he sang with a cover group, you know, and, you know, all for his entire career. And yet he's so engrossed by the music. And a wonderful concert pianist, may I add.
Well, he's an excellent musician, and he's an excellent entertainer. And I went to see him not too long ago, and I haven't seen him in a while, though he's been in touch with me, with my group, for things that we've been going through.
Right.
But I believe very big in truth in music. I watch Mary Wilson. Mary Wilson,
right.
Out here, she's had a hard time. You know, I knew Cornell Gunter because he lived in Vegas,
right?
I knew those guys, everybody. But it got to a point where there were so many groups calling themselves the Drifters, so many groups calling themselves the Platters, so many groups calling themselves
the Coasters,
on and on, that the people were getting confused. You take your wife out for a dinner; it's costing you $60 a pop. You're going to go see the Drifters.
Right.
We at least want to see one guy.
I agree.
One person that says, hey, look, guys, and that could tell a story.
Well,
back in the studio, we did this, but nobody, it got to a point where it was wrong.
Remember the piece of news film with Charlie Thomas where on Eyewitness News where he goes up to the guys kind of incognito and he brings an album. And he walks up to the guys that just got off the stage as the Drifters, and he brings the album, and he points to the pictures of the Drifters, and he says, now, which one are you, and which one are you, and which one are you? And all the guys say, well, what do you mean? And, you know, and started asking them if he knew who these guys and those guys were, and they didn't even know the names of some of the Drifters, nor could they explain who the guys were in the picture on the album, and Charlie went after them. It was an ugly scene.
You know, I'll be honest with you, as far as I'm concerned, these groups that have been doing this, let's put it that way, whether they're right or wrong or different, it don't matter, but they can call themselves tribute groups, they can call themselves salute groups,
they call
themselves cover groups, anything they want. Don't lie to the public. You don't have to. Those people are spending good money. These are baby boomer type guys that most of them are retired to go see these groups. And the bottom line is you don't have to lie. You don't have to lie to anybody. You just say, look, we're a tribute group. We love the music. We love the guys in the Mystics or whatever group
they're
doing a tribute to. And the people will respect that, and the people will still enjoy it.
Well, you know, I, believe it or not, in my career, and I've sung with so many groups and done fill-in for so many groups, but, you know, I did at one time sing with Avita and the Salutations group, but I had Bobby DiPaolo there, and you know, I sang under the guise of the guy that held the trademark. And of course, I sang for years with George Galfo, who was a tenor, an original founding member of the Mystics, you know, and whatever.
Yes, George is the original guy.
Right, of course. And you know, there's that. But then as you do the circuit and you do some of these big shows, you know, a typical example is this. You know, Terry and Teresa Johnson are good friends of mine. They also live in Southern Florida, and we see each other socially. And, you know, of course, there was the Flamingos group that were the sons of Jake and Zeke, and they went out. And then there was Terry's group. And then, you know, you look at the Ink Spots groups and how many groups are running around doing Ink Spots. And it does get confusing.
It does. It really does. You know, I'm 100% for truth in music. I think Bowser's doing a great job. I am also 100% for tribute groups. I don't want to be one way. It's not fair.
No, I understand. But just you're saying, tell it the way it is. That's all.
I just don't believe in lying to the public.
Right.
I do not believe in that. I don't believe you have to. If you got a good enough group and those people are well entertained, and they'll understand that you're not an original guy. One group that sticks in my mind are the Duprees today.
Right.
Every one of those guys are fabulous people. They're wonderful singers. They're not one original in that group.
That's,
you know that?
That's correct, but you know what?
They don't get up on a stage, and they don't boast about being, I was there in 1964. They don't do any of that stuff. They keep it class, and if anybody asks them, they tell them the truth.
No, well, you know, I did one time in at Lyman Hall in New Haven. Kenny Jordan was the MC. You know, he was the DJ in New Haven.
Right.
Did see Lou Velez's Del Vikings that night, and he was talking about, you know, when we were in England and we met the Queen, and you know, and I'm saying to myself, you weren't in England, and you weren't the one that met the Queen, and, you know, you weren't there then. Just tell it the way it is. That's all.
Yeah, and that's a fact. But what I like about the Duprees, and Tony Testa really is a nice guy. And
absolutely.
I met him and Tommy, and, you know, those guys are really nice guys, and they're doing a really good job keeping that group alive and keeping it going.
You bet. And people, very well. People
right?
have accepted them as the Duprees, you know.
Right,
I mean,
because they don't.
For people that haven't heard him, I mean, you know, they have nine pieces behind them. They carry a big show with them, horns, and Mark is a great arranger and everything. And, you know, they do a great job giving you Duprees.
Well, you see, there again, that's what they Mike, we all know Mike Arnone was the last living Dupree,
right.
Basically, I guess. I don't know about the other guys, Mike Kelly
Well, Mike Kelly was there early on. He was there, you know, early on. He might have been the first lead, Mike Kelly.
Yeah, and Joey Van, right?
And Joey Van came after Mike, actually. But Joey Van, I think, is the one that's most remembered.
Yeah. Well, I think the fact that I'm trying to bring out here is that this is a group that is well accepted. They don't boast. They don't brag. They do a great job.
They just sing good. They just get up and sing good.
So good. And they've got a wonderful act. And that's my point. And that's truth in music as far as I'm concerned. They got permission from the Arnone family to use the mark. I think that's wonderful. And I think that they're actually, honestly, that's called renting the mark.
Right. Okay.
They're paying a commission for it. And that's fair. It's good because they do a great job. But so many groups, and you know it, Mike, all over, I mean, the casinos, I can go on and on, the Diamonds, there's so many that Bowser has stopped now. Bowser has with his Truth in Music bill and all over the United States, I think there's 35 states right now that have it.
I remember, it's got to be even going back 20 years ago, I was on the Solid Gold Jukebox in Poughkeepsie. On with me that night was Chuck Rubin, if you know Chuck, the music lawyer, and Mary Wilson. And they were talking 20 years ago about the fact that they need to push this through. And it took all of those years, really, to get it to the forefront.
Yes, it did. And it took a brilliant guy like John Bauman to do that.
Yep.
And Bowser. And it took him to take the Vocal Group Hall of Fame and push it forward where this could happen. My opinion is I hope these groups can turn around and call themselves a tribute group or whatever. Like with my group, there's a chaperone group, but it's a salute group, and they're doing great. They're doing fine. They're a great group, and we had the trademark, but we trademarked it a long, long time ago.
Right.
And but I wish that all these groups could get together and don't lie to the public. That's the bottom line. You don't have to lie to the people. If you've got a good act, they're going to love you.
No, I hear you. I mean, and there are an awful lot of tribute groups around. Listen, I worked with a group, when I was with the Mystic Group, at the Red Rose Room. There was a group that used to come in called the World Famous Platters, and they're from Branson, and they hop back and forth between Florida and Branson. And I rehearsed with them during a sound check one time, and I went right over to their table. They were sitting and just, having a little snack, and I said to them, "Do you know who Herb Reed is?" And they said, "Who is that again?" I said, "Herb Reed." They said, "No, I don't think I know who that is. Who's that?" I said, "Only the last living member of the Platters." And they kind of looked at each other, "Oh, gee."
Yeah, it's a funny thing, though. I don't blame the actual guys that are singing and girls that are singing. My blame is on the promoters and the managers of these groups knowing better. A group's going to get up and they're going to say, they're only going to do what the manager tells them. "Oh, you're fine. They're not going to say anything better. You get up there and you be the Platters."
Right.
And that's really what happens, and you can't really blame the artists, because maybe a couple know, but the bottom line is the actual guys, they just tagging along and having fun.
Then what's happened over the years too is that how families are. Families are like, there's an ebb and a flow, and they're like amoebas; they change shape all the time. And so then you have a Chuck Negron that's out singing on his own, and the other three Dog Knights are out doing their own thing. And you have a Felix and the Rascals where, one group of guys is doing their thing and the other's doing their other thing. And what do you call it? And how do you do it? So it's become, Chuck Negron's version of Three Dog Night. It's become, Charlie Thomas's Drifters,
right,
as opposed to Bill Pinkney's Drifters, as opposed to, but as you say, as long as you tell the people who you are and what you're doing, then, everything is the way it should be.
Well, when I played Vegas and I was the Brothers I worked in the chaperones then, I was the Brothers, we had a great act. We didn't have a hit record. People loved us. We had a great act, a lot of comedy, a lot of fun. People come pack them in in Las Vegas, in Reno and Tahoe. They just love the act. So in my estimation, if you have a good show and you put on a good act for the folks, they're going to love it.
It's about the music, and it's about being...
We're not really the Drifters, guy. We're paying tribute to five guys. Benny, can name them all. Benny, can you name them all off that we love? And we hope you enjoy our music. And I think the people will love it.
Yeah.
I honestly believe
but
that.
But what's funny to me about the Drifters is, and that's a special situation, is that every one of those guys, none of them own the trademark. They were all salaried guys who came and went and were hired and fired, because none of them who ever sang with the Drifters were on that trademark. The Drifters were a situation... what's his name? The guy from England. He was originally born in England.
Yes, that's right. I can't remember.
Thorogood or something like that, I think his name was, or something to that effect. And now his daughter, he passed away. His daughter owns the trademark for the Drifters. But every one of those guys, from Clyde, from Benny King to Charlie Thomas, they were all just like salaried guys. And believe it or not, Bill Pinkney fought Charlie Thomas for years. Bill Pinkney was only on one record, and that was the Christmas tune that they did. He was only on one cut, and yet he had a whole career from that. So go figure.
Oh, I know that. I know. Yes, I do know. But the truth in music, a lot of people may be listening in right now that don't know exactly what the truth in music is, a lot of the people. The truth in music, first of all, it states that you have to have at least one original on stage. That's one original guy.
Right.
Or you have to have permission in writing, the people, the personal people that own the mark, the trademark, USPTO trademark.
Right.
You must have permission, and in writing, and that's basically those two things. So you can't be up there and just use the name, or you can't put a name in front of the drifters, like John Doe's Drifters.
Right.
You can't do that. It's totally not done. Charlie Thomas can. He was an original.
Right.
On it, and the other guys could.
Right.
Mike Arnone probably could have, because he was an original Dupree.
Right.
He could have said Mike Arnone's Duprees.
Correct.
But he didn't do that. He put it in as the Duprees, and that's what he is.
Well, a perfect example is George Galfo's Mystics, and you know, Georgie was there. Georgie was there when they picked the name out of the hat. So, I mean,
you know what I respect about George, and I think that you would too, because you sang with him.
I love George.
The bottom line is, he didn't have to say George's Galfo's Mystics. He could have said the Mystics. He
right.
was on the mark.
Right.
He's actually on the trademark. He could have said he's the Mystics, but he had class. He called himself George, George, because that's because Phil Cracalisi, the original lead singer in Albee, those guys were appearing as the Mystics.
Correct.
But what he said, George figured, well, I'll just be George Galfo's Mystics and have my own Mystics. And that's what he did. He was able to do that.
Well, you know, Joni Sperling is George's manager and the Mystics, George Galfo's Mystics manager. And she was very smart. She gave George very, very good advice when George was, going through the whole legality of it. And she led George threw this very nicely and got all the information, and George did it the right way, which was, which was the correct way to do it.
I give George credit, and it's not easy because people will say, well, what Mystics are you? You know, you're not the Mystics.
Right.
Well, you know, so George had a little bit of a hurdle to jump when he did that. But you know what? Guy's got a lot of class. He's a sweetheart type person.
Oh, yeah.
Joni's doing a fine job. And
right.
I wish them a lot of luck.
Absolutely. And you know, what's really funny is that, people would come up to me after a show and they would look and they would say, well, are you an original Mystic? And I would say, no, I'm a next generation Mystic. But then, you know, when you think there were an awful lot of fine people that sang with the Mystics, Johnny T, John Tarangelo, actually Bruce Sedano was a Mystic who's had Brooklyn Dreams and is married to his wonderful wife, Donna Summer. Jay Traynor, the original Jay, was a Mystic for a while, and Paul Simon was a Mystic for a while.
Can you imagine that? So, that's nice. And I know now, I think the guys are working again. I think Phil Cracalisi, they're still doing jobs, too.
Correct.
The other Mystics, I'm not really sure, because I'm not on that coast, you know.
Yeah, I saw them just a few months ago, and as a matter of fact, Phil did a couple of promos for the Harmony Street show, which I run every once in a while.
Well, that's terrific. I tell you what, it just blows my mind that you know all of these people, Michael, and that you've been hanging in there with this music and all music. Having a good knowledge of the doo-wop thing is great.
Uh-huh.
You, and I'm not saying this for no other reason,
right,
that you are very familiar with all of the situations and
yeah,
a lot of different things in our industry.
Well, I was lucky enough to have hung out in some of the really big recording studios, Media Sound being one of them, and Soundworks, Alan Raymer's Soundworks next to Studio 54, and Richie Calandra from Spyro Gyra had Secret Sound, and I spent time there, and I watched most of the big acts record, and I had a lot of fun, but I did it as a fly on the wall, and every once in a while I got asked to come in and do a vocal or play some guitar licks or something like that. But I learned a lot just by osmosis, just hanging out with these guys. Like you always say, when you're playing tennis, if you play with somebody better, you get better. If you're playing basketball, when you play with guys that are taller than you, you get better. Same thing with singing or recording. When you sing with guys whose chops are real good, it brings you up to the next level.
I agree with you 100%. I 100%, because I have been very lucky in my career. Coming to Vegas, and I've hooked up with my partner, Donnie, who has the American Superstar Show, which is at the Stratosphere. Give me a little plug here. If you guys go to Vegas, anybody out there goes up to Vegas, go say hi to see Donnie's show. It's American Superstars. It's an impression show. It's at the the Stratosphere Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. I think it's $49 ticket. You get to ride the roller coaster up on the top, and it's a good shot for Donnie. He's got a great show. He just put in a Lady Gaga impersonator. So he's real excited about it. Him and Mark Callis have the show up there, and they're doing really a great job. And
now that's Charlie Callis' son. For those,
yeah, that's Charlie Callis' son, Mark, who's a very really neat guy. And him and Donnie, who my former partner and best friend. You'd be interested in this, Mike. Donnie just got a star put on the Walk of Fame.
Oh, wow.
In Las Vegas. Right in front of the New York Hotel.
Wow. You know, and what's really funny is, you know, I actually spoke to you just before Paulette and I went out to Vegas last year. We had actually our first anniversary. And, you know, I said to her, come on, honey, we're going to go. We're going to get tickets to see Danny Gans. And we got there. And, you know, for some strange reason, all of a sudden there was no Danny. You know, it was the week before.
Yeah, I know, and it was a sad thing that happened to him. Danny Gans was the new, how could I put it, Wayne Newton.
Right.
Danny Gans was the epitome of an all-around excellent entertainer.
And he was a ball, ball player.
Right, he was a baseball player, right. Dodgers, but he was in the minors, and he was about to go up, but he was not well. That was a reason he didn't make it.
Right.
Anyway, make a long story short, Danny was an excellent entertainer, a wonderful person. He started at the Rio. God, he started out, I remember, on a four-wall deal there, and he did great.
Wow.
And Steve Wynn touched him. Steve Wynn, I've known Steve for many, many years.
Wow.
Steve Wynn touched again Danny Gans. He gave him his own room at the Mirage, and he just did absolutely fantastic. And I remember Siegfried and Roy for years.
Wow.
In touch with Steve Wynn, got him. He pulled him out of the Lido de Paris show. Vegas is my background. I've been in Vegas for so long. I know all the intricate.
All I can see is Steve Wynn's feet dangling over the top of the Encore when they built the Encore. And I'm saying to myself,
well, he sold all the Mirage. Properties.
Yeah.
It was Mirage Incorporated properties.
Paulette and I only stay at the Wynn. We stay at the Wynn or the Encore.
Yeah, well, Wynn is he opened, that used to be the Desert Inn.
He
is on the Desert Inn area. Steve opened, built one of the most beautiful, beautiful, biggest hotels there. And it absolutely is beautiful. The Wynn is a beautiful, beautiful hotel. It's first class. But Steve has always been, I used to work for him. I worked for him many, many times.
Wow.
I was there when he bought the first hotel. He bought the Golden Nugget. I was playing the Golden Nugget.
That's unbelievable. So, you know, you have Las Vegas in your bloodstream already, you know.
I've had it. I mean, you know, we had all the stars. We knew them all. We knew everybody.
Yeah.
Kenny Rogers was a great guy. Kenny Rogers was with the first edition.
Right.
You remember when he was with the first
edition. Sure. What condition my condition was in.
Mm-hmm, that's right. And he took in, Kenny did a lot of, became a very good friend of Steve Wynn's. And when Steve opened the Golden Nugget, Kenny did was he made a deal with Steve, where Steve would finance Kenny's career, and Kenny was going to bring all the country singers into the Golden Nugget. And he did. He brought Waylon and Willie.
Wow.
He brought Barbara Mandrell. He brought the Bellamy Brothers. He brought Dolly Parton. He brought George Jones. He brought all the country singers, B.J. Thomas, into the Golden Nugget, and then the next thing you know, Kenny went into Nashville, recorded, and he had the first big hit, which was Lucille.
Wow, yeah.
And another one that you
wasn't Lionel Richie started producing Kenny Rogers for a while, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Stuff for Kenny. But you know, another guy that I worked with was Lee Greenwood.
Greenwood. What chops he has.
Yeah, Lee is a keyboard player, sax player.
Wow.
And he was actually a rock player, kind of like, the boss. What's his name?
Bruce.
Yeah. And he was kind of like that. And he was in a show called, what was it? He was in a variety show that was at the Stardust. And he was writing.
Huh.
And he was a rock and roll player, Lee Greenwood. And we were in the same room with him. We were in the same lounge. I was talking 250-seat people lounge. All of a sudden, he says, Tommy, guess what? I said, I got a hit. I said, what do you mean you got a hit? He said, I just got a hit. It's called IOU. And the next thing I know, he takes off his rock and roll clothes and he puts on his country boots and country tight jeans and
no kidding.
His cowboy hat. And he goes to Nashville and his record shoots up to number one, which is IOU. And he quits the band. He was in a group. He was in a show called Bad Touch of Vegas. That was what the name of the show was.
Right.
He goes to Nashville. Next thing I know, he's doing great. We don't hear from him in a while, right? This is a great story. He comes out. He does the America thing, proud American, and that was all they wrote. He had his first. He had his two hits in a row. And then he was writing anyway.
So most people think that he started off country.
Yeah, you know, he's a rock and roll player. He always was a rock and roll player. Plays sax like you wouldn't believe.
Look at Glenn Campbell. You know, he was you know, part of the Champs that did Tequila. We talked about that the other day. And boy, he played with the Beach Boys. He had his own show. He was the Smothers Brothers summer replacement show. I mean, the guy's done it all.
Well, Glenn Campbell to me was top of the line. He was very close with Jimmy Webb.
Yep.
He wrote a lot of songs, I guess, for him. And bottom line is, he's one of my favorite singers. He's had trouble along the way, too. Well, not that we all have it. I mean, let me cast the first stone.
Yeah.
We've had trouble along the way, but that's our life, and that was all part of our industry. And it was a wonderful life for me. Guys like Glenn Campbell will always be in the limelight because he's one of a kind, a great guitar player. You know, one of the guys I really like out here, and I know it may sound strange to some of the doo-wop people, is Gary Puckett.
Oh.
I think Gary is an excellent guitar player. He's on a lot of records that you don't even know. Just like Rod Stewart. Rod Stewart's a fabulous guitar player. He's on a lot of recordings.
Well, you know, Johnny Maestro always had a lot of wonderful things and respect for Gary Puckett.
Gary was an excellent entertainer. I worked with him many times. I produced a show with him in it. Him and his brothers, the Union Gap, when they first came out. But Gary, he wrote those. I mean, he's a good writer. He's a good singer. He's an exciting entertainer. I have to say that about it. A lot of people say, well, Gary Puckett, you know, he's old. Yeah, he's an old timer already, you know. But the bottom line is he's a wonderful performer. I mean, an excellent performer.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, he's one of those guys that you listen to his records and, you know, he's got that range. You know, and a couple of guys sang in the clouds. He's one of them.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Gary has a range, but he's a great. You know what? He plays. He's a great guitar player.
Yeah.
It blew my mind when I first met him. And then another group that I'm trying to think of, this group that came into the Flamingo, into the Sahara, they did Cherish.
Oh, yeah, Association.
Association.
Yeah.
And then I had him on my television show. I used to have a TV show with my partner, Donnie. We had a called the Brothers TV show. It was great.
That's fun.
Before cable came to Vegas.
Uh-huh.
That's how far back it was.
Wow.
We were on Fringe time.
Wow.
11 to, like, 2 o'clock in the morning. It was a flip. It really was. I had a lot of fun doing that, too. But so many groups that were so talented that have come through that I have met in my career. It was just...
No, I mean, you know, and it becomes part of you absorb it and it becomes part of you. It becomes part of your experience. And then, you know, you're always the sum total of your parts. So, you know, when you absorb all that other stuff from all of those other great people and you go out and you do your thing, you know, you're part of them. They're part of you. You know what I'm saying? Universally speaking.
Yeah, it is. I know. I just want to say this. If some of the group members, because I know a lot of people listen to your show and that are group members and with the doo-wop and oldies. And,
right.
I just want to say that the only thing that I missed in my whole career was the fact that I did not stay in New York. Because New York was the mecca of where I came from, Long Island.
It's a special kind of place, just like Vegas is, but it's a special kind of place. It never goes away.
And I'm really very sorry that I didn't get to meet some of the fine singers that were there. Because I was in Vegas, Reno, and Tahoe. It was my life. I moved on, but I've always missed the food in New York. I've missed the people in New York, Long Island. I missed the wonderful life I had growing up there, and all the wonderful singers that I never got to meet that were singing with some of these great groups that were in and out and stuff like that. And that was the only reservation that I actually have in my heart that I didn't get a chance to know these, to really get to know them, by working opposite them or meeting them. The fact that doo-wop is back and people are talking about it, and the
right.
baby boomers want to know about it again, and it's part of a wonderful time of life.
You know, what's interesting, too, you know, when I had my group Harmony Street, and I was lucky enough to have hooked up with the three ladies that sing like angels, and when you have three girls behind you that are always on, you know, it's like... It's a lot of support, but we did Starlight Records, Bobby Kretschmar, you know, and we had an interesting situation. We had the only two tunes ever recorded for Starlight that had music behind them, because Starlight was mostly a cappella. But one of the CDs that we were on, the compilation CDs, there was a cut of Blueberry Sweet by the Chandeliers. And it was interesting because, of course, the Chaperones recorded that as well.
Yeah, we did. I remember it very well.
Shadow dear, waiting by the phone.
Right, no, I understand.
When I left the Chaperones, I worked with the Three Jacks. We played all over the island.
I remember them very, very well, Tommy. Now you're telling me you were with that group. I remember seeing the group.
Yes, and then you know it's the strangest thing. My life has. And then when I made it to Vegas and I came out to Las Vegas, Nevada, you know we were first class. The guys looked great. The girls we had were fabulous. We were high energy.
Right.
Because we knew that, to compete with the other acts, don't forget, we're up against name acts like Tower of Power.
Right.
And groups that came in from all over the world.
Right.
The Irish Show Band, Los Blues. Some of these groups were absolutely fantastic. A lot of horn groups. So we had to be good. You know?
Or the Fabulous Thunderbirds.
Yeah. You know what's strange? It's like this, Michael. I think you can understand this. When you bowl with good bowlers,
you get better.
You bowl better,
right?
When you play golf with good golfers, you golf better,
right?
The same thing. When you're playing opposite groups that are great, I mean, you just want to get up there and be competitive.
That's right.
Teacher, and so all my life I have been. I mean, our outfits were fabulous. I got to be honest. We were making the money though, because the tech was always in the cage. And in order to be to have the nice things, we had to. We got paid well. So
right.
So you can understand. I was always a professional. Even it's a very sad thing. You know, the one thing that I miss.
Go ahead.
In all honesty, the one thing that I do miss is that I couldn't be with. And meet and see all the groups that I grew up.
Because you were busy working.
I was too busy.
Right.
Las Vegas, Reno, and Tahoe, making a living at Harrah's and Sahara hotels, and you know, working all the hotels there and making a living.
Right.
And so I missed Long Island because my heart was always there. We talked about this.
Yeah, a lot of great stuff came out of Long Island. You know, I mean, there's so much talent came out of Long Island. It was like, you know, half the music on the radio was because they gave Long Island an enema.
That was the only thing that I miss was the fact that all the years that I had been in Nevada, were all the years that I missed my friends. And here's a good example. When I moved to Naples back then, and I went to Dino Pete's, And I met it to Jimmy Gallagher, and I had Jimmy Gallagher since we were kids.
Right, I hear you.
He says, I remember you. He said, we did the Clay Cole show together.
Right.
And I said, yeah, I was one of the original. He says, Tommy, he says, God, you don't even look, because we didn't look the same. He looks the same because he's older, you know.
Right.
But my hair was gray, and you know, and he looked at me, and I said, you know, Jimmy, it is really a wonderful thing to see you guys. It really is.
Yeah.
And I missed all of those groups. Over the years, because I was on the West Coast, so it was everything. So that's the only thing that I miss: meeting everybody at Dino Pete's, Stan from the Del Satins, and meeting Larry Chance again, which I had.
Let me tell you, Stan Ziska is such a sweetheart. I love him. He was my first. Do you know that Stan Ziska was my first interview 2 years ago when I first started the radio show? He was my first interview.
Yeah, he's just a real nice person.
Oh, I love him.
I went to a party. That's how I see him again. I went to a party at Johnny's house.
Right.
And a Christmas party or something. We drove over from Naples, and I think, I don't know, no, Barry wasn't with me. My wife and I went. But seen Jimmy and a few of the other guys, and I didn't know Lenny, and I didn't know Eddie from, you know, that was with right. Those guys. Were
well,
with
I go to Johnny's Christmas party every year. That was probably the one that we missed one. I think that was the one that I missed.
Probably it, because I would have talked to you,
right.
And you and I would have hit it off. I know that, and it's just sad that when you were with George, I have so many fantastic stories to tell you, but the only thing that I really missed was the guys back east. I'm going to blow your mind with this. Are you ready?
Yep.
In 1956 or 5, we decided we're going to be singers.
Right.
Okay? I'm a kid in school. So we find out that this guy, I think it was probably 56 or 7, you would probably know. We find out this guy in Amityville, this old black guy, is teaching groups.
Right.
Okay. His name was Miller.
Okay.
Miller. So we go into Amityville, and this guy, we find out that he wrote the one by the Heartbeats, 1,000 Miles Away.
Oh, okay.
His girls were the Miller sisters.
The Miller sisters. I remember the Miller sisters, yeah.
Yeah, and they were gospel.
Those were my cousins.
Right.
One of the girls in Harmony Street sang with them for a little while.
The Miller sisters were great. They were
Miller
old sisters.
Yeah, I remember them.
So Mr. Miller says to me, well, this is the way it worked. You go into the house. It was in Amityville. It was a little bitty house.
Right.
They send you in the basement. Everybody goes down, and all the groups were down there, all the different black guys and all the white guys, all mixed. And we all become really good friends, right? I mean, so we're all waiting for our turn to go upstairs, and Mr. Miller would be brought on a piano, and he'd give us a half hour of singing.
Right.
And we would learn, and that's how we did it, right? So he says to me one time, this old man, I mean, teeth broken, beat up old piano.
Right.
Played from his heart. Man, this guy was something else. He really was. The girls were beautiful. Black girls. Just darling. And he says to me, he calls us, we're going to name you guys the Hot Drops. That's what we're going to call you.
We're
like four Italian guys. Roy, me, and so we go. But he looks over at me, and this is going to blow your mind. He
says, and you probably said to him, "But we haven't even throbbed yet."
Yeah, it's so cool.
We're too young to throw.
Yeah, well, we kept going, and we would go every Wednesday or night or something. We would go, and he said to me once, and looked me in the eye. He says, "You know, Tommy," he didn't have to say this. He says, "You're going to go very far. You sing very well."
Right.
And you know, I was a kid. I'm 16 years old.
Right.
And I'm thinking to myself, he said I had a good ear, and he says you sing right on, and he says you're going to go really far.
Yeah.
And you know what's so strange, Michael? I have remembered it all my life.
Oh yeah,
that this old black man,
yep,
who was teaching all the groups, all the harmonies, lining up the harmonies, showing how to do it, and he told me, and it's the strangest thing, and I remember it. I'm 69 years old.
Right.
And myself, I still remember him telling me all my life that I would be a good player, a good singer.
And you can build upon that. And what's funny, like, you know, me having been a dean in a junior high school all those years, sometimes you'll say something to an impressionable kid, and that kid will carry it for the rest of their lives. It's happened to me with kids. And you'll go home and you'll forget it because it's just said in passing, but that kid will take that little pearl, and he'll take that little pearl and he'll keep it in his back pocket forever.
And I can tell by just in your voice, that we haven't met face to face really yet. We will, but I can tell in your voice that you have that.
Oh, yeah.
That's you. And I can see why you've been successful, married a wonderful woman, even at a later age.
Right.
But the bottom line is, you are, from what the inflections I get in your voice, you're a giving individual.
Well, thank you for that, Tommy. Thank you much. Well, Tommy, it's been so great having you as a guest on the show, and we have so much in common, and we could talk for hours and hours and hours. I will tell you this, that between the two of us, I'm convinced that rock and roll will never die, because we're going to keep the music alive.
Yeah, you know what? It's really great, and it's been my pleasure to be with you, Mike, and on the radio with everybody, and I hope maybe get to see some people when I come out down to the East Coast, down to Florida.
Yeah, well, you know, Paulette and I go to Vegas on a regular basis, and I know the last time we went, you said, you know, give me a call when you're there and whatever, and things just got a little crazy. You know, we were busy doing this and that. But the next time we come, we're going to call ahead, and we'll get together, and we'll have some fun. And, you know, when you come to Florida, I'll be very annoyed at you if you don't call me and tell me that you're coming. We'll get together with Johnny Cantino. We'll do some music. We'll go down and see Johnny and Renee play. And we'll have some fun. We'll see Barry.
Yeah. You know, I just want everybody out there to know that Las Vegas today, there's a lot of East Coast people, a lot more than ever before in Las Vegas. And the bottom line is, doo-wop here is coming to Vegas and more every day and accepted more. There's a lot of doo-wop and oldie type, you know, people are moving. Well, there's 4,000 people a month, even though the economy is bad. We all know that all over the country. But Vegas is wide open, and I look forward to seeing everybody again, you know, down the road here. So, but it's been my pleasure, Mike, being with you. It really has.
Absolutely mine as well, Tommy. And ladies and gentlemen, Tommy Rocca from The Chaperones. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Bye now, Tommy.
Okay.
Hey, that was my interview with my good friend Tommy Rocca. What a sweet, sweet guy. Now let's sit back and listen to some of my favorite tunes on the Harmony Street Show. Here is Lenny Welch with My One Sincere. Here's Dion's version of Sunday Kind of Love.
I'm through with my old love. I love her through and through. I'm searching for a new love. Can that new love be you?
I want a Sunday kind of love, a love to last that Saturday night. I wanna know it's more than love at first sight. I want a Sunday kind of love. love that's on the square. I can't seem to find somebody to care. I'm on a lonely road that leads me nowhere. I want a Sunday kind of love. Sunday dreaming and all my Sunday scheming, every minute, every hour, every day, I'm hoping to discover a certain kind of lover. Someone to enfold and keep me warm when Mondays are cold. A love for all my life to have and to hold. I want a Sunday kind of love.
Eddie James, one of the best. Tell Mama. Little Anthony, originally with the Chesters, The Fire Burns No More.
Love. meant nothing more. Let's forget. The fires burn no more. The fires burn no more.
No more.
Into the night, to love is warm. Nothing more, let's forget. The fires burn no more, the fires burn no more.
Here's Dion with Joe Neary and Jimmy Gallagher in the background. Shoebop.
Shoebop, shoebop, oh, 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 shoebop.
Strange to me. bop, wow, shoo, bop, shoo, doo, 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 bop, wow.
Cadillacs had some great ballads as well as up-tempo tunes. Get well, Speedo. Here's Earl Speedo Carroll. You are.
So deep in my heart, you are the girl I love. You are my enemy. You are, and yet my ecstasy. You are the flame deep in my heart. You are the girl for me. I tried in vain with someone new to take the place of you. I live. You are my only loss. You are, and yet my only gain would be
to be
just the way you are.
Brenda and the Tabulations, Tip of My Tongue. one of my favorites, Lorraine by the Bonnevilles.
Seated so close to you on a crowded subway car. Afraid to touch your hand, you seem so very far. Stop. You get up and you leave. I like the way you walk. You move with ease. Don't even know your name.
Just for now, I'll call you my Lorraine.
Sun by day, and your eyes are like the moon by night. Well, I don't even know your name, but just for now I'll call you my Lorraine. Holding you so tight. Don't even know your name.
Just for now, I'll call you my Lorraine.
And you listen to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show. Mike told me to tell you that.
Here are the Crests with Johnny Maestro on lead, Molly May.
And I'd say every night, I love you. Of you, the picture we took together before I went away, I carry in my wallet to look at.
No one steals you away, Molly May, Molly May,
Molly May.
Molly May, Molly May. no one steals you away. Molly May,
Molly May,
Molly May,
Molly May.
My good friend Mike Palladino and the Bonaires, Out of Sight, Out of Mind.
Ba, 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 ba.
Out of sight, out of mind. Though the story goes, you forgot I exist. My broken heart knows. Out of sight, out of mind, you found someone new, but I can't change my love the way that you do. I sit around wondering,
wondering
about your new affair. I should forget to remember and remember not care. I'd forget if I could, but my heart is blind. You are gone out of sight, but not out of my mind.
Hey, this is Mike Miller. Good night from the Harmony Street Show.
Open up your heart. Recall how it used to be. Remember all the love we found.
Ooh. On Harmony Street, ooh, there was a place
we
used to go, when we were feeling down
and
we were low. We couldn't believe our eyes
when
we were there. Wasn't it a big surprise to find
we really cared?
We looked into each other's hearts.
Harmony Street.
Oh, yes, there were times when we had it all figured out. Then there were times when we both had our doubts. But through it all, you know, our love was complete. We spent all our time on Harmony Street.
Ooh.
We could couldn't believe our eyes when we were there. Wasn't it a big surprise to find we really cared? We looked into each other's eyes. Yes, there were times when we had it all figured out. Then there were times when we both had our doubts. But through it all, you know, our love was complete. We spent all our time on Harmony Street.
Open up your heart, recall how it used to be.